Good morning. Hope everyone had a good second day yesterday and a good night, and we're on tap for a full schedule today on our third and final day of the conference. So we're starting out this morning with something that we've never done, but we think will be an interesting panel on how fans consume baseball in the digital age. And Vince Gennaro will be moderating that panel. And then following that, we've got a panel on the international baseball landscape at 10 o'clock, just a few minutes later, and that will also be in this room. At 11 o'clock, we have two research presentations. Bill Petty will be presenting Quantifying and Understanding the Consistency of Pitchers, and that will be here in this room. And then at the same time upstairs in the Phoenix Ballroom, Louis Paulus will be presenting If You Build It, Rethinking the Market for Front Office Personnel. And then immediately following that in this room will be the Saber Analytics Conference Research Award presentation for contemporary analysis. Then we'll all head up to lunch. Lunch will be in the atrium where it was yesterday. At 1:15, we have a prospect analysis and evaluation panel that will be in this room. And that will be followed almost immediately by Telling Stories in the Age of Sabermetrics, which will also be in this room. And at 3:30, Bloomberg Sports, which originally was going to be on the first day, will now be doing their presentation, Next Generation of Analytics. Dan Cohn of Bloomberg Sports will be joined by Kyle Evans. Kyle's the special assistant to the president and GM of the Cubs. And then we'll have a conference wrap-up, and we should be finished by about 4:30. So now I'll turn it over to Vince for the first panel.
Well, good morning, everybody, and thanks, Mark. You know, a couple of months back, Mark actually had this idea of, you know, why don't we do something where there's some fan interaction, and we talk a little bit about the baseball fan today. And when he said it, a light bulb went off, and I said, you know, that's a great idea. I said, and why don't we focus it and make it narrow and make it really about the young fan today? I don't think it's any secret that baseball is working hard to attract the young fan. We're in a different era, many more distractions than when I was growing up, where baseball was much more of a centerpiece of the household. And so these are challenges, you know, and I was talking to my daughter at breakfast this morning and thinking about this. We spend all this time and put all this analytic energy into the topics that are mainstream at this conference, topics like, you know, how much is Mike Trout worth, and, exploring pitch FX data and all of those things. But if you really think about it, if we don't renew the fan base and find ways to connect with the young fan and refresh that fan base, then the dollars aren't there, at least not in the proportion they are today, to make the other topics we're spending all the time at the conference about that important or that much more interesting. So in a way, it would actually be a great thing if we saw some of the analytic energy, talent, and horsepower that we have in the industry and in this room, perhaps hit the pause button and maybe be redirected briefly to analyze and understand the topic of how to get young fans interested in the game today, and what are the issues impeding that, and what are the issues that are working to our favor in getting young fans introduced to the game. So really, what we're about today is exploring that. And we'll do it in sort of a focus group fashion of, exploring it with four people who I'll introduce in just a minute, but, you know, that I think will be representative. I mean, obviously a sample size of four. We're all in the business to know what that represents. But we also know, any good researcher knows, that any quantitative study always starts with good qualitative insights so that you know the right questions to ask and the right issues to address. So, you know, the objective today is really to gain insights into how a young generation of fans relates to the game of baseball. And just to give you, sort of a bit of background, think about how this game, from a fan standpoint, has changed over the 150 or so years that it's been in existence. I mean, even a century ago, the fan base was overwhelmingly male, and the only way to consume a game was essentially at the ballpark. So we're talking about 1914, you know, right at the beginning of, actually the beginning of World War I. You know, the Cubs, about 15 years later, in the early 1930s, pioneered the first Ladies' Day. And they actually had free games for ladies, and they got to a point where after doing a few of these, they gained so much momentum, they actually were filling the ballpark and completely to capacity and actually turning away paying fans. So they made a modification and restricted the number of Ladies' Day free tickets they would give out. But that started a flow, and other teams copied this, and it started the introduction of the sport to women. And of course, it grew from there. On a parallel timeline, you know, we began to see games recreated through the telegraph and turned into, you know, I guess you'd call them artificial or recreated radio broadcasts, and then live radio broadcasts, and then, of course, TV. And now every game's available on your iPad or your laptop or even your smartphone. You can watch it in split screen. You can watch four games at once. You can rewind to create your own replays. The fan now controls the viewing experience. And I think we have MLB Advanced Media to thank for that, really to thank for the empowerment of the fan. It's kind of ironic in a way that one of the more conservative and entrenched sports, baseball, is the most advanced digitally and was leading the way in terms of introducing the game to their fans through the, you know, in the digital realm. And then, of course, fantasy baseball came onto the scene in the 70s, but really exploded over the last 15 years, really changing the way fans adopt the game of baseball as from a fan standpoint. And, you know, 50 years ago, I learned the game through black and white TV, watching the Yankees when I was living in northern New Jersey. And, you know, that was my team. But when you think about it, it was my local team. And in a narrow window of about 5 years that I was really becoming a fan, they were actually the only team in New York, right? It was between the Dodgers and Giants fleeing to the West Coast and before the Mets were born. So really, all I knew from baseball were the Yankees. And that's what people of my generation, when they grew up, all they knew were their local teams. Then eventually you had one game of the week on a Saturday afternoon with, you know, Joe Garagiola or Tony Kubek doing the broadcast. But it was really sparse. And today, you know, and also I used to listen, like many of my contemporaries, would listen to their transistor radio at night because you could get signals from much further away. So that's how you'd take in, I'd take in Pirates games or Tigers games on the radio, listening to them as I was falling asleep at night. But today's fans, I mean, it's such a different world. Today's fans are only somewhat more likely to adopt their hometown team as theirs. And they're not particularly likely to consider the players on those teams as their favorites. There's no real bias there to the hometown in that sense. They're more likely, their favorite players are more likely to come from their fantasy leagues. So, you know, internet, smartphones, fantasy baseball, what BAM has done have dramatically grown the game, but they've also complicated our interaction with the fan and complicated it from a team standpoint and an MLB standpoint on how to get your brand out there and how to create those connections and cement them. So this session's really all about hearing from a sampling of young fans who happen to be avid fans, but in a focus group type setting, to hear about their attitudes, perspectives, behaviors, how they adopted the game. And again, I said it's to gain insights, it's to understand how they interact with the game, how they attend and watch games, how they get their baseball information, how they relate to fantasy and the role it plays, and how they become fans of a team or players, the role that the baseball websites that we're all familiar with or maybe not familiar with play, and even the role of analytics in their understanding and appreciation of the game. So with that as a preamble, I'd like to have our panel introduce themselves, and we'll start with Louis. Louis, if you can just tell us your age, your hometown, what school you're at, and your favorite team and favorite player.
Hi, my name is Louis Pellis. I grew up in Cleveland. I'm 21 years old, and I'm now a senior at Brown University in Rhode Island. I grew up a Tribe fan. I recently converted to the Reds. My favorite players growing up were everyone on those great tribe teams of the 90s, Lofton, Bisquel, Tomei. Now I probably have to go with Danny Salazar.
Okay, go ahead, Olivia.
All right, I'm Olivia Wyatt. I'm 18 years old. I go to school at Tufts University. I'm a freshman. I'm originally from Minnesota, and so my favorite team is the Twins. I adopted my hometown team. And two of my favorite players growing up were Justin Morneau and Denard Span.
I'm Hunter Gilbertson. I'm a junior at NYU. I grew up in Chicago. My favorite team is the Cubs. When I was younger, controversially, I guess now, my favorite player was Sammy Sosa. Now, I like Javier Baez. He's a Cubs prospect. And if I'm going non-Cubs players, I like Bryce Harper a lot.
Yeah. I'm Jake Soder, 22 years old. I go to Elon University. I'm a senior. I'm originally from Northborough, Massachusetts, so my favorite team is the Red Sox. Grew up with them, obviously. Loved the great or the not-so-great teams in the 90s, and then got a little bit lucky in the 2000s, and have had a pretty good run of success since then. So I know people tend to think we're a little bit spoiled up in Boston, but I do love my Red Sox, so that's where I'm from.
Well, that's great, and thanks for taking the time this morning to be part of this. You know, let's start out by talking about what was your earliest memory or connection point to the game of baseball, and why don't we start with you, Jake, down that end. And you know, what was it that you remember early on and that sort of maybe perhaps sparked your interest in the game?
Well, I don't know if it was really one instance. I know that I've been a Red Sox fan my entire life, and with most, as is the case with most Red Sox fans, it's kind of almost a religion. So it's like, how did you become what you are in terms of religion? Nobody really knows. You just are as a Red Sox fan. So I grew up right from when I was born being a Red Sox fan. My earliest memory was my first game. I think I was 6 years old, which would be 98, I guess, which was when the Red Sox had, you know, Mo Vaughn at that point, which is, I guess, ancient history at this point. But that was my earliest memory. And from that moment forth, I just, you know, fell in love with the team.
And how about you, Hunter?
I think the earliest vivid memory I have of going to a baseball game was actually a game up in Milwaukee. It was Brewers-Cubs, and it was the game that Brant Brown dropped the fly ball. It was during the 98 season, and the Cubs blew the game. And I just looked at my grandpa and said, "What happened?" You know, I was really confused. I was upset.
And they said, "You have a lifetime to learn."
Yeah. But yeah, so I mean, I was hooked that season watching the home run race. I guess I could give Sammy Sosa the credit for making me a huge baseball fan. And then the thing that really hooked me even further was 2003. I went to a Cubs-Cardinals game, and it was in June, I think. Corey Patterson got hurt that game, missed the rest of the season, but I mean, I loved the atmosphere, and I fell in love.
Olivia.
For me, I can't really remember an exact point where I started to love the game, but I remember going over to my grandpa's house, and he was very much like Robert De Niro in Silver Linings Playbook with the juju and having to be a certain way and superstitious. So I would always have to sit in the same spot on the couch holding a Twins blanket and just like hoping that they would win.
That's great. Louis.
I honestly don't know how I grew to love baseball, because I've been thinking about it the last couple of minutes, and all my earliest memories of baseball are about me crying. I think when I was 2 with my first baseball memory, I was at then Jacobs Field for a game, and it was rained out. I was really upset that we didn't get to see the game. Then the 97 World Series in Game 7, I remember crying in the car. And the day David Justice was traded, he was my favorite player at that time. And then to see him go to the Yankees, another player they stole from us, you know, that was hard for a 7-year-old. So I don't really know how I got into baseball or to love it. It probably was being around those Indians teams of the 90s. I thought it was normal growing up to have Kenny Lofton and Omar Vizquel and Robbie Alomar, Manny Ramirez, Jim Tomei. That was just what I knew. I didn't realize how lucky I was to be seeing those kinds of teams.
Any one of you, what about, you know, I know in some cases, in many cases, family has influenced your affinity to the game or your choice of teams. I mean, Hunter, what about you from your standpoint of any connection points or stories about that?
Sure. Well, when I was younger, actually, my grandfather grew up as a White Sox fan, and my dad grew up as both a Cubs and a White Sox fan. I don't know how that happened, but I actually have a picture of me on one of those Custom Sports Illustrated covers in a full White Sox uniform. And I was like, no, that's not happening. And as hard as they tried, I just, you know, like I said, Sammy's power was more convincing. And ever since, me and my grandpa kind of heckle each other about the Cubs and the White Sox, and it's been fun. And I told him, you know, it's coming soon, because he's had the better of it up till now, but the Cubs will be better soon.
Jake, you?
Both sets of my grandparents are enormous Red Sox fans, so it was only natural that they got passed down to my parents and then to me. So, you know, my whole entire life, I've just been totally enamored with the Red Sox, and it's never been anything else. So, really, my whole entire life.
You know, it's one thing to have it passed down and influenced by grandparents or parents, but to what degree was it an integral part of your relationship with, say, your grandparents?
It's a huge part of it. Still to this day, I mean, every time they come over to my house, I go over to their house. If it's in the summer and the game's on, we're watching it. So, and if we're not inside, if we're out, you know, hanging by the pool or something, the game is coming over the radio and we're all intently listening to it. So really, you know, we're always involved together, really. It's not just me. It's not just them. We're involved together. So, topics of conversation, you know, that's always the first thing we talk about when I see them is, you see the game last night, and yeah, what a great game, and or no, what a terrible game, or so it's a really huge part of our relationship.
Yeah, Olivia.
Yeah, same for me. All of my family are extreme fans except for my mother, but she tries now that I'm interested in baseball. She tries to understand what's going on, but it's just something that connects us and brings us together, even though we're scattered across the country and the world. That there's just a way for us to stay connected through baseball.
No one else in my immediate family likes baseball very much, so I don't know how this happened. My parents got caught up in the Indians in the 90s a little bit. I think that's the spark that inspired me, but by the time I was 4, I think I cared a lot more about baseball than they did. My sister still is mad at me for all the times she had to come to my Little League games and be bored in the grass while we were playing. But both of my grandfathers, I think, in a way influenced the way I saw baseball, though I don't think this to the same method did for you guys. My paternal grandfather was a radio host in Cleveland and Pittsburgh for a few decades, so he got to interview some of the great players. I remember him telling me about meeting Jackie Robinson and Stan Musial, so I sort of got a sense of the history of the game through him. Then my maternal grandfather, he was on, he loves, I guess, the more literary side of it or the more entertainment part. He actually used to root against all Cleveland sports teams, so I still don't know where this came from. But he introduced me to Casey at the Bat, and he was he did some vaudeville performing when he was a kid, so he loved Abbott and Costello. So who's on first? I could recite that from memory when I was in kindergarten, thanks to him and my dad.
Well, that's great. You know, and I can tell you, as someone who does a lot of focus groups with baseball fans and some of my work I do with major league teams, although most of my work is on the baseball operations side, I also do work on this side of the equation. And I can tell you that I consistently hear the kind of cross-generational, intergenerational connection that baseball means to the family. And it's not just something that's, as I said, passed on. It's like Jake was articulating. It actually becomes kind of woven pretty deeply into the fabric of the relationship itself. Perhaps not as much with the parents in some instances, because the parents are interacting with the child on so many more levels. But oftentimes it becomes really central to the grandparent relationship. So I guess one of the things that speaks to, as in terms of building the fan base, in a way, you know, as we age, we play a role in that, right? In terms of passing it on to people in our sphere, to young people. And so that's just something to keep in mind. Well, let's talk about what was it about this game of baseball that captivated you? You know, anybody can start, but what is it about baseball that either got you interested or continues to retain your interest today? And by the way, maybe those are two different things. Maybe what got you interested and what keeps you interested are different, but I'd love to hear from you.
For me, it was the mental aspect of the game, the mind games that pitchers and hitters play with each other, and the strategy that's involved in every situation of the game. And I guess it was only natural then that I would become a pitcher later in my life, and then that was my primary position, because I wasn't the most physically imposing guy on the mound, but I really thrived by playing those mind games with hitters and and strategizing in my own head and going about the game that way. So from an early age and all through high school when I was playing, that was really what grabbed me and kept me involved.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, for me, I guess what I really fell in love with at first was just, I guess every spring, it was going to the ballpark when the weather started to get better, just experiencing that feeling of eternal optimism, you know, that we get at the beginning of the season. I there was nothing like it. There's no other feeling in any sport that you get, other, you know, like spring training baseball. And also being a player myself, just having that kind of be a parallel at the same time. And as I've gotten older, obviously I've become more interested in analytics and how baseball is played and how it actually works. And for me, that's continued to keep me heavily interested in the game.
For me, it was always just a family thing and how we kept connected. But once I reached high school, it was get up every morning at 5:30, get home every night at 9 p.m. And it was just always really hectic. And baseball, just there's no clock. There's no rush. You can just take time and enjoy what you're doing, who you're watching. And there's it just is really relaxing, and it was a way to escape from all the stresses that I had in life.
Interesting, yeah.
I can think of two things that I think influenced what captivated me about baseball. Again, the Indians teams of the 90s, I can't express how great it was to grow up with those teams. Great time, one of the only great times in Cleveland sports history. But it was that and the numbers. A story my mom tells everyone that she meets is that when I was in T-ball, when I was 4 or 5, my teammates would come in from the field after a bat and they'd say, "What's my RBI now, Louie?" And the thing I'm embarrassed about that is that I used RBI. I don't think I did that even when I was 4. But it was that combination of the having the numbers there that really told the story of the game and then having such a great game to watch. That's what did it for me, I think.
Interesting, yeah. And so, you know, in some cases, I think what we'll find is that the thing that instigates it is the connection with the parent or the family or with friends. But as it goes on, you begin to appreciate and understand the nuances of the game. And you know, Olivia alluded to this, and it becomes bigger than just the family connection, although that can often stay a big part of it. How does your relationship with baseball compare to your relationship with other sports? You know, what other sports are you interested in? I know, Hunter, you're a big Chicago sports fan, really across the board. But how do you compare your relationship with baseball to your relationship with, in your case, the Blackhawks in hockey and the Bulls and so forth?
I would say that I have a stronger connection to baseball compared to the other sports. I mean, I just grew up in a sports house. My dad is a sports junkie. He's basically like a stats encyclopedia. And it kind of just started sports in general as him quizzing me on stats. And baseball is really the most stats-oriented game of the sports that we follow in the house. And so that kind of, and on top of the fact that I played, it made the connection deeper and more meaningful to me. So personally, it's just, it's the aspect that you can get into the numbers, you can get into the game, and just playing it myself, I have a more personal connection to the game than I do with the other sports. Like I'm a huge fan across the board, but baseball has a special place for me.
Yeah, Olivia, how about you?
Baseball is obviously the sport I'm most invested in, but I mean every Sunday I'll watch football with my brother and my dad, and I'm a big hockey fan. But for me, it's more. Like, I'm invested in the numbers game of baseball, but when I watch hockey, I try to stay as far away from that as possible just so I can, like, enjoy another sport and I'm not constantly analyzing what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Oui.
I'm in the band at Brown, so I get to see tons of different sports. We play all the football games, basketball, hockey, sometimes lacrosse or field hockey, soccer, too many different sports. And I've tried to like all of them in my great exposure to them, and I just can't. I don't know what it is about baseball that makes it something that I love, but other sports don't compare at all for me. I wish I knew so I could learn to like the other sports, but they're incomparable for me in my fandom.
Yeah. Jake?
My experience is pretty much the same as Hunter's. I mean, I grew up loving all four major sports and played basketball and, you know, part of the way through high school played basketball even, but it was never the same type of commitment or the same type of relationship that I had with baseball. And I ended up dropping basketball to focus all of my time on baseball played it all year round, and when I wasn't playing on a team, I was working out, and it was just, there was just nothing like, I guess, as a player, working to make yourself better, and then that turned into just an absolute infatuation with the game in general, and there's just nothing really like it. I don't know how else to describe it.
It does seem like a difficult thing to articulate, and I think perhaps a lot of people in this room are feeling the same way that most of the folks up here feel, and we're sort of self-selected into this room partly on that basis, right? And I certainly feel that way as well, that it's so hard for me to create the connection to other sports, but I wish we had some deeper insights, and I'm sure some people do, as to what really the root causes of that are. How much of it is that familial connection with our parents and our grandparents or our friends, or how much of it is just the nature of the construct of the game itself. One of the things perhaps, I mean, I think we hit on a couple things. The numbers aspect, there's a certain segment of the population who relates really, really well to that, and that's a connection point that draws you back again and again. The other aspect is, I feel like, and maybe you'll disagree, and please do, that baseball is more of a 365-day-a-year game than the other sports. I feel like it's more topical at all points in time. I don't know if the media drives that or if the media just simply picks up on that. But I do feel like baseball is in the new. There are very few dead spots when baseball is sort of out of our consciousness. Now, I'm probably perhaps a little biased, but I mean, I don't know. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's obviously a difference between football is once a week and it's the season's literally in terms of months, not as long as baseball. For baseball, it's just like there was something like coming home from school every day. You'd have that game. You'd have a game every single day. So it was a connection. It was a relationship that formed and grew every single day rather than just once a week. And even in the off season, it was, you know, borderline obsessive, checking trade rumors, reading forums, always posting. It's literally a 365-day-year sport relative to other sports where I'm checking, I'm interested when NFL free agency starts. But it's not something where literally every single day of the year I'm checking updates or watching a game or doing something related to baseball, which is what I am doing.
Yeah.
I think baseball is unique in the sense also that during the summer, when hardly anything else is going on, there's always baseball every single day. And, for us growing up, obviously we weren't in school during the summer. So wake up, watch baseball highlights, go to baseball practice, come home from baseball practice, watch more baseball, watch more baseball, watch more baseball. Whereas during the other points in the year, there's other sports going on. So, you know, the focus can be shifted elsewhere. But during the summer, it's just baseball, which is, you know, it's beautiful almost, yeah.
And there's a certain rhythm to that, right? There's a daily rhythm to it. And there's something comforting about, there's something exciting about a football game on every Sunday, although they're no longer just on Sundays. And, you know, having it happen 16 times a year in the pros or 12, 13 times in college. But there's something very different about the rhythm of a baseball season that endures for 6 months on a daily basis. So I think that's a little bit of the nature of it. Let's talk a little bit about how fantasy baseball fits into your world, your life. Anybody can start.
I play it. It's not an enormous part of my baseball experience, but I do play it every year, I try to keep up with my team as best as I can with everything else that I have going on. But for me, it's always just been the real thing. It has been so much more important to me, maybe because I'm a Red Sox fan and every year they're competitive. But it's really just, it's always been the Red Sox over everything. And fantasy baseball is a great thing, and I love it, and I love to participate in it. But it's not a huge part of my life.
Okay.
For me, I mean, I grew up playing fantasy baseball, playing baseball video games, playing all sorts of stuff, and I guess it's a way for me. It's like kind of playing GM, which is kind of fun, and it's also there's a social aspect to it, where it's a way to connect with family or friends or, you know, even complete strangers and just bragging rights. It's just across the board. It's a fun thing. I would agree with Jake. I'm more into the actual real baseball, but for me, fantasy is something that I do on a yearly basis, whether it's one, two, or maybe even three leagues.
Has it affected the way you treat the game and view the game and think about the game?
I think it has allowed me to be more appreciative and like players that I may not have otherwise. Ryan Braun, for example, he carried my fantasy team for 2 or 3 years, and you know, even though he's an in-division rival of the team I root for, it creates a relationship with players that you wouldn't otherwise have had.
So that's something that, if not for fantasy, you cannot envision yourself having appreciated or adopted Ryan Braun as one of your players, right?
I think that's fair to say.
Yeah. Olivia?
I have not played fantasy baseball. A lot of the reason for that growing up is none of my friends were baseball fans. When the scores would come on, it would say runs, hits, errors. I would have to convince them that those weren't points and that it was three different things. But I think it's a great thing, but I really like to be involved with the real aspects of the game, and I think I would consume myself with fantasy baseball, and then I would have a zero GPA.
Louis.
I don't play fantasy baseball anymore. I had to give it up last year when I took an internship with a team. But for 7 years, I think, before that, I loved it. It was something I always checked back and procrastinated my homework with. I had these traditions I did every year on draft day, and my teams always seemed to follow the same pattern every season. For some reason, I think for the first 5 years I played, I always lost the first 3 weeks and then ended up winning the division. I guess we're late bloomers on my team. But I really did love it, but I don't play it anymore.
So how do you think, even across your peer group, if not for you personally, each of you personally, how has fantasy baseball changed the way people like you view the game? And, you know, talk about this. You know, I mentioned earlier there was an era when people were growing up adopting baseball as their favorite sport, that it was just imminently logical to have your hometown team be your team and your hometown players be your players. Today we're in a different world. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly right. It's almost kind of interesting. I was saying to these guys earlier, but for a sport that's been viewed so long as America's pastime, it's almost become sort of a niche interest among our generation. It's kind of unique for you to find somebody who's totally into baseball the way people are into other sports like football and basketball. So with my group of friends, if we're just watching a game and there's no invested interest with fantasy baseball, if I turn on the game, it's like, well, where'd everybody go? You know, like people are just like, I don't want to watch just baseball. But if there's fantasy involved, people are much more willing, I guess, to sit through an entire baseball game with me.
Yeah. And anybody have anything to add to that in terms of their perspective on it? Okay. Let's talk about how you get your baseball information. And this is an area that has probably seen the most change over the last even 10 to 15 years for sure. Really, the generation that you were growing up in and adopting the game, we've seen a real transformation in terms of the options you have to get your baseball information. And so how do you get things like game results? I mean, is it on a live basis flipping from game to game? Is it where do you go to find out how your team did or how other teams did?
For me, I get updates right to my phone after every Red Sox game, the final score, and I'm always on Twitter, probably way too much, I guess, at this point. I'm always keeping up with those updates, and then I have the MLB TV package, so I just don't tell any of my professors, but I sit in class and watch games during class. That's the majority of how I get. When I'm away from the TV, I always have it with me on my mobile device.
Did you really forget one of your professors is here? Did you forget that?
I've never had Dr. Okay. Burgers as a professor.
Okay,
so
okay.
If I had, I wouldn't have said that.
Okay. Hunter?
Yeah, very similar. I have the MLB at Bat app, and it sends me updates every single time the Cubs finish their games. But also, I'm checking, you know, Fangraphs, I'm checking ESPN, I'm checking Baseball Prospectus almost every single day. Actually, every single day. And I also have the MLB TV package. I'm watching on my phone or my iPad or my laptop or my TV almost pretty much every single day. So if I'm not watching the game, I'm following the game via webcast, and it's basically baseball all the time. You can get it all the time anywhere, and it's definitely changed from, you know, when I was younger. It was go to Cubs.com, go to MLB.com. I'm looking at the stats, you know, once in a while. I'm watching the games on TV when I got home from school, and that was pretty much the extent of it. Now it's, you know, it's basically you can have it anywhere you want in any capacity. You know, I feel like I'm spending 10, 15 minutes every single day at least on my phone looking at stats, just looking up. I'm at a game. I'm looking up how this guy's done over the past couple weeks, and it's changed and really enhanced the experience.
For me, if I'm at my laptop, I mean, I'm checking all the major sites, and if otherwise, it's always on my phone, on Twitter constantly.
What are the major sites?
Major, like Baseball Prospectus, Fangraphs, just as Hunter was talking about. And if I'm at a game, I'm still on Twitter, which is really nice because like the Twins have Wi-Fi, but it could be better. So if like all teams had Wi-Fi that was really strong, I think that would really help the younger fan base because we're constantly on our phones.
You know, that's a great point. Wi-Fi in ballparks, and there's a major initiative by Major League Baseball to make sure that a Wi-Fi equivalent, we'll call it. I don't think it's technically Wi-Fi. Will be in all ballparks in the not too distant future. I don't know if it's at the end of this year or the year following year, but it's a real issue around the 30 stadiums, and I think that's being addressed and being solved because baseball wants their young active fan, those active on social media, and others to, and everyone really to have access to that. Louis?
Yeah, I don't have much to add to what everybody else said. My only option to watch games is MLB TV. When I'm at school, when I was on campus, our campus cable didn't have any sports channels at all, really, except ESPN, which didn't show the Indians very often. And now that I'm off campus, I don't have cable. So my only option is MLB TV. And if I'm not at my computer to watch a game, something bad has happened.
So we've got MLB TV, which is the internet-based package. And then we've got something called MLB Extra Innings, which is the TV package available through either DirecTV or your local cable operator. Am I sensing that most of you are not, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you're not watching this on the MLB Extra Innings package on television sets?
Yeah, especially now, if you have a streaming device or something, you can just get the MLB TV on the TV anyway.
Right.
So it's a more flexible option. So I think that's become the preferred way to consume it.
Yeah, is that a general consensus?
Yeah, I agree. Like as college students, like we're constantly busy, we're constantly moving, as are like the rest of the world, and it's hard to find time to just sit down and watch baseball for 3 hours. So if it's on your laptop or if it's on your mobile device, you can take it with you anywhere, compared to having to sit down and like watch it.
Yeah. Hunter, in your case, when the Cubs aren't playing, what are you watching? I mean, let's say the Cubs are a day off. Are you sort of taking that day off or?
No, I mean, if the Cubs aren't playing, there's probably a lesser chance I'm actually watching a game. There's still a good chance I'm watching a game, but I'm still consuming baseball, and I'm still reading, you know, 15 articles on X or Y player, and I think that the great thing about the MLB package, the MLB TV, is that it gives you every single team, so. If the Cubs aren't playing, I can check the Cardinals game or the Red Sox game or the Yankees game, and it makes it so that pretty much no matter what, I can watch some sort of game, even if my team isn't playing.
Yeah. Jake, what about you? If Red Sox have a day off, what are you doing?
If the Red Sox have a day off, I'm probably watching the Yankees game, rooting for whoever they're playing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Being honest. sorry.
No, that's okay.
No, I know. But yeah, no, it's either that or going in, like Hunter said, reading up on Baseball Prospectus or any one of those sites or even ESPN.com and taking that day to recharge and get ready for another, you know, 10 days of baseball. So.
And how much, particularly for the two of you, how much is at that point, maybe when the Red Sox or Cubs aren't playing, following your fantasy players and are you watching games maybe that, you know, your best fantasy player is playing in?
Yeah, MLB TV actually has a cool feature. You can set it so that it monitors your fantasy players. So, I mean, sometimes you'll just be sitting there and it'll say your fantasy player's about to come up to a bat. You click on it and just switch back and forth, and it's really cool just to be able to get a live view of pretty much everyone on your team.
Yeah. Interesting. Any thing to add on your sense? No? So what about social media? I mean, you know, you mentioned Twitter. I mean, where does social media fit into your connection to baseball? Is it something that, you know, you're active in terms of getting the word out through social media from your perspective, or are you looking at social media more as a source of information for you on baseball, and what kinds of information?
I think for me, it's both. For me, I'm involved in media a lot at Elon, so I'll take information in a lot. I'll use it as a news source, and then from that, I'll funnel it through, I guess, my Twitter account, and I guess use it as a way of giving information to the public. So for me, it's I kind of use Twitter as almost a channel in that sense.
Yeah.
I try to stay away from being a participant in social media. I think that's a dangerous area to get into.
Well, you got a little Ozzie Guillen in you, or
no,
what?
No, just extra precaution. Just being safe. But I do like to use it as a source for maybe, you know, there are certain people that I follow who they'll post an article, they'll send a link to it, or someone who I'm following found an interesting article that I wouldn't have otherwise seen had I not seen their link to it on their Twitter.
Yeah.
So I like it. It's a nice way to kind of catch articles or interesting tidbits that may have fallen through the cracks that I wouldn't have caught on the front page of BP or Fangraphs.
Mm-hmm.
As a participant, I try to stay neutral.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Olivia?
For me, I'm definitely on the receiving end of Twitter. I mean, just as Hunter, like following, trying to find different articles. But I also think it's really great when you're following like players, because you get to see a more humanized aspect to them, and you can see what they're really going to say, and not necessarily what you're going to get when they're in a proper interview, and just them like talking with their friends, or you can talk to them, so it makes them seem more tangible than they used to be.
That's a fascinating point, you know, about players' Twitter accounts, and you know, I happen to follow Brandon McCarthy, probably because of his connection to this conference over the years, and you really do see a side of players, and I wonder if that does that affect your affinity and relationship to a player and how you feel about players? I mean, talk a little bit about that, anybody.
Yeah, I think it definitely does, especially if they're not on the team that I root for. If they're not on the Red Sox, I can, you know, I can pick out a player. Like I follow Brandon McCarthy also, and he's phenomenal on Twitter. So you get to see a different side of players, like you were saying, and you get to almost become I guess, a part of what they're thinking, and you get to attach yourself to them, which is really cool, because if you don't follow them on a day-to-day basis, like we would with our favorite players on our favorite teams, it's a unique way to get involved with what they're doing.
Yeah, I think it adds a whole other layer to the experience, to the relationship. Just, you think, like, the HBO has their show where they follow a team, and it kind of adds, you know, it adds that element of kind of relating to the player. For following players, it just, I don't know, it just makes you feel like you have a more personal relationship with them. I don't know how else to describe it. It just makes it makes you more invested in how they're doing, and it might make you more interested in a player that you wouldn't have otherwise been.
Yeah.
Like Brandon McCarthy, he posts crazy, hilarious things all the time, and it makes you more of a fan of someone that you may not have appreciated as much before.
And do you follow players on your team as well? And are there you know, most of the players have active Twitter accounts, or not that many these days?
That's a good number. Do not all of them yet.
Who's a Cub that's particularly interesting to follow on Twitter?
Oh man, the Cubs really. I guess Jeff Samardzija is interesting.
Okay.
He's got more of a outgoing personality, but I think one of the more interesting guys in the league is Puig. He's a very interesting character,
uh-huh,
at least, yeah.
Are there any Twins who you follow?
Yeah, I follow most of the Twins who have Twitter accounts. Brian Dunsing and Glenn Perkins have a lot of back and forth on Twitter, which is kind of fun to see, like,
yeah,
their relationship, and you can see players' relationships viewed, like, through Twitter.
Red Sox? I'm sorry.
Yeah, for me, Mike Napoli is extremely interesting. He's quite the character, but I also find it interesting. I follow, for example, John Lester. And he has a bunch of different things that he does in the community, because obviously he's gone through cancer and has a huge personal connection to that. So it's really interesting to see all the things they're doing in the community. They'll post updates and pictures from their visits to the children's hospitals and stuff like that. And it's a really great opportunity to see a different side of those kinds of players than what you see on the field.
I interrupted you, Olivia.
Oh, no, it's fine. I was just going to go on to say that how, like, some players choose not to have Twitter accounts, like Joe Mauer, he refuses to create a Twitter account because he doesn't want to get involved in that world, because there is a lot of controversy that also goes on in Twitter. And it's hard for some players to.
Sure. And Louis, what about you? Is Twitter and social media a big piece of your sort of baseball interaction?
Yeah, not as much now as it used to be when I was more active in writing. I still write for a couple sites, so I'm still active on there to some extent. But back when I was an everyday blogger, I used to run a site about the Indians. I was on Twitter all the time talking to other Indians fans and bloggers, interacting with them. A lot of my story ideas came from discussions I had with them. And I still do that to some extent now, but not to the same extent. But yeah, Twitter's been great for me for that networking purpose, or at least half a dozen people here whom I've met and recognized from Twitter, whom I've interacted with a lot, but I never actually met in person. So that's definitely good for that if you're into blogging and analysis.
So let's shift gears and talk about a different way to consume the game, a way that, you know, that I certainly grew up with and my generation grew up with. That's going to the ballpark. So let's talk about where does going to the ballpark fit into your consumption of baseball? I mean, how frequently? Who do you go with? What's that experience like versus the other way you consume the game? Jake,
it's an enormous part of how I consume the game. For one, because Fenway Park is an experience in itself. It's almost in an age where baseball and sports in general are becoming so much more digitized and up to the minute. Fenway Park is still the same almost as it was 10, 15 years ago. So that experience going to the game really kind of simplifies it and brings it back. And every time I go to Fenway, I use nostalgia just flooding me. And it's awesome. It's a great experience. The only place that, you know, that I want to go that I haven't been yet is Wrigley, because it kind of has the same type of atmosphere where it's just what's happening on the field. Nothing else matters. And I love that about it.
And how often do you get to make it? I know you're now down in North Carolina, although not in the middle of the summers, presumably. So how often do you get, or did you get growing up, to go to Fenway?
Growing up, maybe 3 to 4 games every year. Now it's a little less frequent. I try to go once or twice during the summer. I never had season tickets or anything, so it was always a huge treat when I got to go. But I would try to go as much as I possibly could.
Yeah. Hunter?
When I was younger, obviously I could go to more games. I lived in Chicago or the suburbs, so I'd go to double-digit games every single year. It's a huge part of how I would like to consume baseball. I try to get out to the park as much as I possibly can. I feel like, you know, as much as I enjoy consuming baseball digitally, there's nothing that comes close to the experience of actually being there and just seeing the speed and the action and really the impressive athleticism of these players up front. It's a whole nother level that you don't experience by watching it on TV.
Now, when you were growing up in Chicago and being a diehard Cubs fan, would you also occasionally go down to Comiskey or USL?
A bunch of my good friends are White Sox fans, so I've been to White Sox opening day. I'm a baseball fan. I'm a Cubs fan, but I'm also a baseball fan. So I was lucky enough to live in a town that had 2 teams. So I've been to the Cell countless times. I've been to Wrigley Field even more. So, baseball in general, I love consuming it live. It's a great experience.
Olivia, what's your experiences with Target Field or Metrodome?
I go to Target Field all the time. We've had season tickets the past few years. So last summer, I spent probably every home game there except for 5 during the summer. And each time, I would just bring a different friend, or like my brother and I would go to most games together, which was really fun. It's great going to games just because you're surrounded by, you know, when the Twins were good, it was 40,000 other fans. Now it's 30,000 or 20,000 other fans. But it's still, there's a lot of fans there that you just all come together and you're all cheering for the same team, hopefully.
Yeah.
And it's really fun.
That's great. Louis?
I had the fortune this past year to be working for a team, so I got to go to see most of those games, which was fantastic. Before that, I basically would go as much as I could afford to. I made it my goal every summer when I came home from school to go to enough games that I wouldn't miss them when I went back to school, and I never met that goal. I don't know that I ever could have, but I'd go as often as I could.
And so for any of you, who are you attending these games with? I mean, I think, Olivia, you mentioned your friends oftentimes, right? But, you know, growing up, was it, were you going with your parents? Were you going with your friends and your friends' parents? I mean, who are you going to games with, and who are you going to games with these days?
I do go to games with my friends as much as I can, but the first game that I ever went to was a game that my dad took me to. And ever since then, there's really been nothing like going to a Red Sox game with my dad. It's a huge part of our relationship, and it's a really, really important thing that we can do together.
That's great.
I have a very similar experience. I'd say when I was younger, before I was, you know, able to go downtown by myself, I went to games pretty much with my dad as often as possible. As I came to be old enough to go downtown by myself, I would go to more games with my friends. But there's something about going to the game just with my dad. It really is a huge part of our relationship with each other, and it's one of the ways we bond, and it's one of the ways that we connect. And it's just like the two of us can just go and talk sports the entire time, and it's just like it's a really awesome family experience. I think that's a huge part about getting into baseball is the family aspect. It's a big part of why I got into it, and I think that that's a big reason why a lot of the people I see and I know got into baseball.
Growing up, it was always me and like my dad and my brother would go, and I would always be the tag along. So I would just be like, "Can I come too?" And then they'd be like, "All right, yeah, we just have to get another ticket." And so I really just like spent most of the time with my brother. I really look up to him. He's like my best friend, and he really helped me like get involved in the game.
When I was little, I'd go to the games with my whole family, my parents, my sister, and me. Then my sister got old enough to say she didn't want to go, and then it became just my dad and me. And I guess through high school and then college, it started, I would go with some friends more, but I would go with my family because that way I don't have to pay for it. it is still great for the nostalgia to go with my family when I can convince them to come down.
So Louis, let me start with you then. So what's your perfect baseball experience? I mean, we've talked about all the different ways you could consume the game itself. I don't even want to restrict this to your perfect way to take in a game. I mean, what is your ultimate baseball experience? If you had 3 hours to spend on baseball, would it be sitting in the stands at Great American Ballpark, or would it be working on your next research project? Or, and if it was sitting at the ballpark, who would it be with? What's your ideal 3 hours of baseball?
It would be sitting right behind home plate for a very well-played, important game. The company wouldn't matter that much, just as long as I'm there to see it.
Okay.
For me, being with one of my best friends, she's also a big baseball fan, so it's good to be with her. And I'd actually like to be in like the last row of Target Field and the outfield. And just the characters that you get out there and like the cheapest seats are the absolute best, and it would just be hilarious.
Hunter?
Going to a game at Wrigley with my dad. I mean, just experiencing that anywhere in the ballpark. You know, I wouldn't be too picky. Just getting to experience a middle of the summer, you know, hot day, day game. Wrigley Field, it's, you know, the classic experience for me. There's nothing better.
Yeah,
I would, I kind of touched on it before, but I'd be there with my dad. And kind of what Olivia was saying, I'd probably be in the bleacher seats at Fenway. You just don't get the kind of characters anywhere else that you do out there. Hopefully I wouldn't get any type of drink dumped on my head, because that's happened before. But I mean, it's just, there's nothing like the experience of being with the core of the fan base way out there. And I would like to be at a Yankees game, because I've never been to a Red Sox Yankees game, which is just obviously one of the things on my bucket list. It would be with my dad though, definitely.
That's great. Now I'm going to turn this around a little bit. Instead of talking to you as fans, I'm going to talk to you as advisors to Major League Baseball. So now, you know, you're in an advisory committee here that's going to recommend to Major League Baseball what they can do to continue to build a connection to fans like yourself. So give me some thoughts and ideas on something that you would like to see done differently or changed or amplified that's already existing on how baseball can better connect with your peer group.
I think maybe one of the parts of the disconnect with our generation is that people haven't grown up educated enough about the nuances of the game. So maybe in-game things like almost educating the people who don't know so much about the game, because with us, we love watching baseball because every play there's something going on. But for the casual fan, it kind of just seems like a slow game where nothing's really happening, when in fact, so much is happening. And I try to explain to my friends, like, no, every situation in baseball, there's something going on. It's so much going on. And and be like, I don't believe you. So, I mean, part of that is I think people just don't know enough about the game.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a numbers person. So selfishly, I would want more readily accessible information while you're at the game. Because I like looking into the matchups. I like looking into, you know, every single detail, shifts and all sorts of stuff. So just having more information, I guess, but they're already started to head in that direction with trying to amplify the internet in the stadiums. But I guess finding a way to really optimize that and make it as accessible as possible while you're at the game. Not taken away from the game so that people are staring at their phones the whole time, but just a nice way to make it kind of be a seamless complement to what's going on in the field, just to add another layer of comprehension and understanding to what's going on. That's what I would hope.
Yeah, I agree with all that. And even at the games, I mean, there are so many TV screens that are showing the game you're watching live that I wish that they would show other teams playing. Because as much as I'm watching, like, I can see all the scores, it'd be nice to just, like, you know, take a break, like, in between innings and see how someone else is doing instead of just, like, a five-second snippet of, like, a home run someone hit.
You may know that there was a, may or may not know, there was a time when Mr. Steinbrenner was still alive and the Yankees weren't even that fond of posting out-of-town scores on the scoreboard because they wanted the focus to be entirely on the ball game in the ballpark. But again, that's it from a different era. You know, we're seeing things like at the MetLife Stadium where the New York Giants and New York Jets play. You know, they have the red zone channel on the screen there so that people in football, if you don't cater to the fantasy fan because it's such a big business, you will lose your football fan live at the stadium. So they've taken the step to go that extra mile, not just other teams, but literally focusing on other fantasy players or key fantasy players and deliver that experience in stadium to the fan who's watching their game. So it's a kind of an interesting angle. They've taken that step. Louis?
I have two thoughts on this, and these might not be coherent at all. But the first is that it's really hard for young people to watch games. I know that it's, you know, easier than ever with the internet and streaming and all that, but MLB TV is really expensive, and the blackout policy is very restrictive. I know at Brown, maybe like half of my friends are from Boston, so they're Red Sox fans, and they can't watch Red Sox games because we don't get NESN and ESPN and MLB TV blackout Red Sox games. So it's hard for them to be Red Sox fans when they can't watch the games. The second thing, and this isn't very concrete, and maybe this won't make much sense, but there's this narrative of how great the past was in baseball and how current baseball doesn't measure up to that. And you can see that in the way writers talk about, you know, the Hall of Fame election and candidates and how they talk about the fundamentals and how nobody does that anymore. There's this very strong narrative of things used to be better. And I don't know if that's directly affecting the way younger fans see the game, but it certainly won't help bring new fans in if you're telling them so blatantly that, you know, the game isn't as good as it used to be, which, even if it's right, which I don't think it is, that's a harmful message to be sharing with people whom you are trying to engage.
That's an excellent point. I mean, it's, you know, as a former marketing guy, I mean, you never lead with, boy, our product used to be so great, you know? It's just a bad place to start any message. And I think it's an interesting point, and I think I actually never really thought consciously about it. But of course, I mean, the more we romance in the wrong way, I guess, in a certain way, the history of the game, if we don't do it in a nuanced way, it creates an implication about the current game and doesn't cast it in a fond light. Pretty soon, we're going to open this up to questions. So I'll go with one final question to this group, and that is, I'd like to hear your thoughts on a subject that gets a lot of attention, both for the whole fan base, but in particular as it pertains to young fans, and that is your perspective on the pace of play and the length of time of games. And I want to know if this is an obstacle, a deterrent, an issue for either you or your observation of some of your friends who perhaps aren't quite as avid as you?
For me, it's not. For me, I could watch baseball for 5 hours and it's not an issue. But for the majority of my friends who aren't as enamored with the game as I am, it is an issue. That's the major complaint I think I hear from people of my age, is that it's just too slow, it takes too long. And I'm not sure if there's any way around that, just the way the game is played. I think that it's not any different than it used to be. I just think it's more amplified, given the fact that we're always looking for up-to-the-minute, quick access to information, and baseball hasn't, you know, it hasn't gotten any quicker with the digital age. It's stayed the same, which is great for people who love baseball as much as we do. But for the rest of, you know, the population, it's not great.
I'm gonna have to echo a lot of what he's saying. For me, I love the way that the game is paced now. But I realize that I'm in the minority, especially among my friends. A lot of my good friends played baseball, but even some of the ones that did play baseball have a hard time sitting down and sitting through an entire baseball game. They aren't as fanatical as I am about it. So it's difficult to try to sit down and watch a game, and when two or three people who you're with want to switch a channel every single inning because the game's going so slow. And I think it's going to be really difficult to find the right balance, because I think the speeding up the game will, from my perspective, is a negative, because I think that the slow pace, or not necessarily slow, but the pace is one of the endearing aspects of the game. But as it's been talked about a lot, speeding up the game is one of the ways to get more casual fans involved. So I think there's going to have to be a compromise at some level, and it might be better for the game in the long run, the survivability of the game, to speed it up, even if that's not necessarily what I would like.
I definitely agree with both of what they're saying. I actually got one of my friends, who's not a big baseball fan, to watch a couple spring training games with me, and we happened to watch the first game where the new instant replay came into play. And both instances in the Twins game, it was just 2 minutes long, but she was just like, okay, this is boring. Why isn't something happening? And so, as much as it would be good to speed it up to keep more fans, the pace of the game is what makes baseball great.
I agree with all of that. I think it certainly is a negative thing for a lot of casual fans. I love the pace of it. You ever watch one of those MLB.com condensed games? It's not the same. You can watch a game in 10 minutes, but it doesn't feel right when you just see every pitch back-to-back in every play. There's no anticipation. There's no thought. It's just, it doesn't work as well when it's just the action. And I'm just wondering aloud now, thinking about the way I answered the last question, is I wonder if we'd be better off responding, with saying the pace is a positive thing, instead of the typical answer is, yeah, it's boring, but it's also good for these other reasons. I think that a lot of baseball people accept the premise of the question that the pace is too slow. Mm-hmm. I think maybe if we framed it as it's not too slow, it's the way it should be, rather than trying to make excuses for it, that might help.
It's interesting you bring that up, Louis, because to that very point, I've done a lot of focus groups with, literally, I've spoken to hundreds of fans across casual fandom to avid fans. And with pretty good consistency, what I hear is when you're at the game, the pace is a virtue, because there is often a social aspect to the game and there's a social rhythm. You're really not conversing during an NBA game. It just doesn't sort of fit. Yeah, at the timeouts, I guess you can. But you have a certain social aspect to attending a baseball game live. The between pitches gives you that. And that's actually a positive and a virtue. When you're sitting at home or sitting somewhere else and watching TV and you're in a totally different mindset and a different mode, it can become a negative. So there's an interesting dichotomy there. I wanted to open this up to questions if we could. And by the way, in addition to questions from people who have questions of these folks, very willing and welcome other young people standing up and just not asking a question if they don't feel like it, but just quickly giving us a commentary on anything they've heard today and their perspective on it too, since we just have four of the many young people up here today. Who's got the mic?
Yes, I just wanted to get the panel's reaction about pace of the game, because studies have shown that it's the money ball, people walking, taking more pitches has slowed the pace of the game. But it seems to me that you could quicken the game by not letting these batters go out and, you know, like Nomar Garciaparra checking his glove every time and, you know, limiting the amount of appearances that a manager or coach can come out. I mean, things that could be done, you know, even if you're there, I think that would enhance it. And I want to know, I mean, I'm just concerned that baseball is going to just, you know, lose a lot of casual fans. And I don't mind the pace, but these are areas I'm wondering how you all feel that there could be changes with the union and MLB, you know, for the overall betterment of the game looking into it.
Anybody?
I'm biased. Like I said, I like the way it is. I think some of those ideas could definitely help with the casual fans. But for me, and I think a lot of baseball fans who are really into the game and the way that it is now, those are parts, those are little nuances that we love about the game. I think it's a difficult situation because it like you said, it alienates the casual fans. But if you change it, it may alienate the people who really do care about the game.
Yeah, just to piggyback off of that a little bit, you mentioned some of the routines that players go through when they're up at bat, and while that may make the game a little bit longer and make some casual fans a little bit less interested, I know that growing up, for example, Nomar Garciaparra would be up at bat, and he would do his, you know, everything he used to do with his batting gloves and all that. I would know that by heart and memorize it and do it myself. So I think it's baseball's unique in the fact that superstition is woven into the fabric of the game. And it's just a huge part of it. So for the avid baseball fan like we all are, it's a positive. It's not a negative for us. But I do agree that for the casual fan, it can be a little bit annoying, I guess.
I also think that that ties into what I was saying about the narrative that the game isn't as good as it used to be. And you sort of, and maybe you didn't mean this for yourself, but the implication that Moneyball has made baseball less fun. If we take that as, you know, accept that that's true, then why would a new fan want to come watch the game when they know that it wasn't as good as it used to be?
You know, for me, the only person I could ever meet and be...
Stand up, Matthew.
Sure. The only person I could ever meet and be truly starstruck is Gary Cohen. I grew up a Mets fan, and he was the voice of the Mets throughout my life, from WFAN to SNY. But I think only a Mets fan could really understand that. So for you guys, what is something that only you as a fan of your team could understand?
It's a great question.
I mean, it's right along the same lines. When I'm not at the game or I can't watch it on TV, I'm listening to the Red Sox radio station, WEEI, and Joe Castiglione has been a staple of that station for forever, and he has become the voice of the Red Sox. So for me, that's whenever I hear his voice, it brings me back to, you know, when I was younger, and that was what I knew about the Red Sox. So,
okay, yeah. So for me, watching the games, it's always listening to Dick Bramer and Bert Blyleven in the TV booth talking, and then whenever they bring Tom Kelly in there, and he just is very proper and has all these sayings and little nuancy things that just, it makes it a Minnesota kind of thing.
Two things that only a diehard Cleveland fan can understand. First is that Tom Hamilton is the best play-by-play man in all of baseball, and the second is that Omar Vizquel should be in the Hall of Fame.
I mean, I have the same. The Cubs changed their announcers, a handful of years ago, but the radio announcer Pat Hughes has been there the entire time. I've been a Cubs fan, so for me, it's kind of cool. Like you said, MLB TV has a little option where you can change the audio feed. So, I mean, my dad used to do it where he'd mute the TV and put on the radio while the broadcast was going on. So sometimes, you know, for a little nostalgia, I'll do the same with the MLB TV options, and I like that.
Todd?
With so much garbage out there on Twitter, who do you find to be valuable to follow? I'd like to hear from each of you on that.
I love following sports writers. I think that the more that I follow, the more different opinions I can digest and form better opinions of my own. So I really, really enjoy following as many sports writers as I possibly can.
Yeah, I think pretty much read as much as you can on baseball, and if you find someone who you feel like is like-minded with you and the way you think and the way you digest baseball, that's pretty much the process that I've gone through when I've decided who to really pay attention to. And over time, I've grown fond of certain writers, and that's how it's progressed.
I mean, for me, I follow writers as well as execs, and as you said, there are plenty of, like, garbage Twitter people out there. But it's also interesting to see what some of them have to say, because a lot of it is very crazy, and it might spark something that I had never thought about before.
Interesting.
Three things I look for from online baseball stuff, whether it's in the form of 140-character tweets or long-form articles. I want it to either convince me of something that I didn't agree with before, tell me something I didn't know, or make me laugh. So if you can do any of those things, then you're probably worth following.
That's great. Who's got a mic? Yes, stand up, please.
So as baseball fans, or fans of your team, what's your most favorite moment and least favorite moment? For me, most as a Yankee fan, the Aaron Boone home run in 2003. Least is a tie between Luis Gonzalez's blooper to end the 2001 World Series and Johnny Damon's grand slam in the 2004 ALCS Game 7.
Well, I want to start this one because my least favorite moment is Aaron Boone's home run. I almost wanted to ask him a question the other day when he was up here, or just pretty much tell him that he made me cry when I was 11.
We got a lot of crying going on today in this panel. I don't know.
My most favorite moment, I guess, would have to be the 2004 World Series. I was sitting on the couch with my dad, and as soon as Edgar Renteria hit that hopper to Keith Foulke at the mound, and we were going to make the last out, I just remember he grabbed me, and I was just like, what is happening? And that was the greatest moment I've ever experienced. I don't think I've ever seen my dad that emotional about anything. So it really stands out for me.
Being a Cubs fan, there are plenty of bad moments. If I had to pick, everyone goes back to Bartman, but not for me. It's also another moment in that game was Alex Gonzalez botching the double play ball. Which was, for me, always a bigger reason that the Cubs lost that game, where you could go back to game one in the series. Grudzelanek also botched a double play ball in the ninth inning. But to go for a positive moment, I was actually at game one of the series and saw Sammy Sosa hit the home run to send it to extra innings, so that was unbelievable. The whole stadium, I thought, was going to break. Wrigley was just going crazy, and that was undescribable, and I can't wait to experience something close to that again.
For me, my best and worst moments probably come in both game 163s that I've seen for the Twins. I mean, losing 1-0 to the White Sox with Jim Thome hitting home run and then winning 6-5 and 12 was just unbelievable.
Is anyone here from Cleveland? So you guys know what the catch means. 1996, Kenny Lofton jumped about 12 feet in the air to rob a home run. I still remember where I was when I first saw it, and I like watch that replay at least once a week. It's the greatest play I've ever seen. So that was my best moment. My worst is probably going to be Game 7 of 97, and I'll try not to cry again this time.
Yeah, I was in the stands for that Kenny Lofton catch. It was remarkable, and I recently did a bobblehead giveaway, right, commemorating that over the outfield wall. Let's take one more question, and then I've got a few wrap-up comments. Please.
So I have a comment leading into a question. I'm originally from Los Angeles. I moved to Boston to go to college, and I found that actually the move across the country away from my hometown team made me appreciate the Dodgers a lot more. I felt like I became closer because it was a way in sort of this new environment to feel connected with my hometown and where I was from. And so I wanted to know, you all have gone to college, and I believe that you all went to somewhere that isn't within the bounds of your team's area. So I wanted to know how going to college affected your appreciation of baseball.
For me, it just so happens that where I go to school at Elon is about 25% from Massachusetts. So I am surrounded by a lot of Red Sox fans, but you're right. When I'm home, I'm just another Red Sox fan. And when I'm at school, it's amplified a lot, whether that's because I like to think that we're better than everybody else and I like to show it, or just because I miss my team and follow them in ways that I haven't been able to before, and, you know, online, and it's not always on TV, so I feel more of a connection to it that way. But you're absolutely right. I do feel more connection to my team being away.
Yeah, I feel like I've always felt very connected to the Cubs, but I think for me the biggest thing is I think I've I may have taken it for granted when I lived in Chicago. I thought, you know, I could go to a Cubs game whenever I want. So now that I live in New York, I think I'm more, I try to take advantage of the times that I am back home to go to as many games as I possibly can and really embrace being around other Cubs fans, because, you know, the Cubs do have a big fan base, but there aren't that many Cubs fans I go to school with. I'm one of few, so it's definitely made me, I guess, appreciate going to the games more when I am back in Chicago.
Yeah, no, Sam, I totally agree with you that, like, moving across the country, I've become much more connected with my team. Just because, like, at Tufts, like, a class of, like, 1,300, I think maybe 10 are from Minnesota in my class. So, like, having a couple of fans there, it's, like, more bonding for just, like, being around your own team.
I agree completely. For, I guess, about half my life, the Red Sox were my second favorite team. I adopted them in 03 because I needed someone to beat the Yankees. And so for, like, most of high school, I wore a Red Sox hat most of the time. The Indians were still my favorite team, but I liked the Red Sox, and I was more comfortable with a B on my head than Chief Wahoo. But then I went to school in New England, and suddenly I didn't care about the Red Sox anymore. So, I don't know, being the Cleveland representative at school reawakened the Indians fan in me and pushed the Red Sox pretty well to the side.
Well, that's terrific, and thanks for your great questions, too. I wish we could go on for longer, but it's time to wrap up, and I just wanted to make a few comments. You know, a lot of what we talked about today is baseball being passed on through family, but also baseball gets passed on through baseball mentors. And I want to acknowledge Wayne McDonald. Please stand. And Andy Andres, if Andy's in the room. I mean, these are two. Please stand up, Andy. And I know there's many more of you, but these are people who dedicate a lot of their life to passing the great game of baseball on to these people. And I just want to congratulate them because, you know, you're part of what keeps this train rolling, this train of baseball. And I think, you know, it's an obligation that we all have, right? If we love the game, and I think it comes very natural to a lot of us, but just particularly, I wanted to single the two of you out because of the enormous amount of time and personal time that you dedicate and commitment to mentoring young people and introducing them to the game at a level that goes way beyond just being a normal fan. So thanks for what you do. And hopefully you've enjoyed today. And, you know, you listen to these folks and it kind of gives you a sense our future's in pretty great hands. But that's the good news. The bad news is this isn't exactly a cross-section of America up here, right? So I think there's still a lot of work ahead of us, but I think this is the model. Thank you.